Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. It's been going strong for over 44 years now, and every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we sit in front of our radios and chat with each other and learn from each other and teach each other and hopefully entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining me tonight. This is going to be our first technical net for the year 2026, and I wish you all a happy, a healthy new year. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. Okey-doke. If you want to reach me via email, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. We offer you an interesting link page every week. I cut and paste a couple of interesting articles or YouTubes or other things that I see, and I put it on a link page. I have a fresh, clean, new link page for 2026, but you can go back to the 2025 link page anytime you want. You get to the link page by just typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. We also offer a chat room. Sometimes it's very, very quiet. Sometimes it's loud and busy. You get to that by typing into the browser chat.ac2gs.com. We also offer an audio stream on the Internet. You can reach it by typing into your browser technet.ac2gs.com. I initially started it for the technical net, but I keep it live the rest of the week, so if you want to listen into the Glen Oaks repeater and you don't have a radio on you, then just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com. Also, I'd like to remind everyone that MyKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who've either moved away from the area or, unfortunately, become silent keys over the years. It's a very good source for information. Let me drop, and I'll tell you what we got planned for tonight. Okay. Regular vanilla-flavored technical net tonight. No guest speakers. Not much really to tell you about artificial intelligence over the past week. I think they're saving it up because this coming week is in Las Vegas is going to be the Consumer Electronics Show, and I'm expecting more than a few AI-based promotional items to be shown. So hopefully next Sunday night we can discuss some of the more interesting ones. We'll see how that works out. Otherwise, we'll go straight to the main segment, which is questions, topics, and comments. Hopefully the first few will be amateur radio related, but we will discuss any science and or technology-based subject if you would like to. We'll try our best. That should take us approximately to 10:15, and Paul, WS2N, will join us for the SpaceNet report. That should take us approximately to 11 p.m., where I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So if the repeater behaves and my shack behaves and I don't get thrown off of All-Star too many times, last week I think it was two times, that's the average. Hopefully, if I have to get thrown off, I hope I get thrown off towards the end of the net instead of the beginning, because it causes a lot less confusion. Anyway, that's the game plan, so we're open for business. If anyone out there has any questions or comments or topics, please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name, your call sign, whether it's amateur radio related or whether it's science and technology related, and we'll put you on the list, and we'll try and get to each and every person who checks in.
KF2ZD. N2XZN, ham radio related.
Wes and Brian recognized. Brian, you have any, I assume you have any questions tonight, but I just wanted to make sure that you weren't just checking into the net.
again. I may have a question, but I wanted to wish everyone a happy and prosperous New Year. I hope everyone enjoyed the holiday and everyone is doing well. And I shall remain on the side for when I am ready.
Okay, very good. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight?
Manhattan with a quick question.
Okay, unfortunately, John doubled with someone else. I caught John, the ID for the other person, so if you could say it again, I'd appreciate it.
Whiskey 2, Delta Alpha Bravo, Dave, with a question for the net.
Okay, very good, Dave. You're on the list. Anyone else want to put their name on the list?
KD2VHD, technology question.
Jim recognized. Someone doubled with Jim. The person who isn't Jim, if you would please repeat your ID and what you said.
KC2, SH2.
Okay, very good, John. I got you on the list. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight?
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf.
Okay, very good, Sam. I got you on the list as well. Since I am a glutton for punishment, I'll ask one more time. If anyone else would like to have their name on the list for tonight, please hit that push to talk. Okay, very good. So we have Wes, we have John, we have Dave, we have Jim, we have John SHO. The first John was ZC. And we have Sam, AE2YG. And someplace, somewhere, when Brian feels like it, he can comment and if he has a question at that point. So first on our list for tonight is Wes. What you got for us tonight, Wes?
Ian to XCN. I sent you one of the videos. It's quite a famous guy in England, and he made a video why I don't want ADR and radio. What he says, actually, and I was trying to ask your opinion in this matter. In SDR radio, a mathematical algorithm decides what it thinks is the truth and what it thinks is the noise, and then reconstructs it as an audio stream. So it is sort of similar like with digital TV. We either have it or we don't have it. We cannot have it in half. We cannot have it in snow. And that's why, if you don't mind to comment on it first. That's the first question, and then I have a second one back to you.
Okay, unfortunately, someone is kind of transmitting in the background and obscuring some of the things that you said. Are you alluding to software-defined radio technology?
That's correct.
Okay, this is going to be a little problematic with the background noise. As I responded to you, the guy is famous because he's promoting. Ultimately, it's a vertically oriented fan dipole. It doesn't require an electrical engineering degree. You could promote that with maybe a high school education. I remember reading about fan dipoles when I was in high school. So it's doable. So Is he a source of great wisdom? The little I know of the guy who's promoting DX command antennas, not particularly. As I mentioned to you in my response, I think he's conflating digital signal processing with software-defined radios. Software-defined radios are not the digital signal processors. They don't manipulate the digital stream with algorithms. DSPs do. You can have an SDR with DSPs. You could have an SDR without DSPs. I haven't seen them. It's probably not cost-effective, but you can do that. And likewise, software-defined radios might involve digitizing the RF spectrum and then manipulating them via algorithms. But fundamentally, they're the same signal as the analogs are. There's nothing intrinsically weird about digitized RF streams. So for almost everything he had to say, I didn't find anything useful in it.
Okay. Just that one sentence. A mathematical algorithm decides what it thinks is the signal and what it thinks is the noise. That's for SDR. True or false?
Absolutely false. If you can, in fact, I have my lovely little Flex 6700, which is a software-defined radio, which has noise reduction algorithms that can be simply turned off. And if you turn them off, they do not change the detected audio stream. They simply don't. The only thing a software-defined radio is a means of operating a radio without analog legacy circuitry that's somewhere within the chain, and there are different software-defined radios. Some of them only operate at first at the level of a legacy IF stage. Others digitize the signal right out of the front end's RF input amplifier. It just means that you're digitizing, instead of an analog RF signal, you're digitizing the RF signal, and then from that point on, you may manipulate it any way that you wish, primarily to filter it and to demodulate it. But again, that doesn't inherently mean digital signal processing and noise reduction. That can be added to the mix, but it's not a part of the definition of software-defined radio. So if you get the definition wrong up front, I don't really think much of a guy who doesn't even know what it is he's talking about. He's basically talking about digital signal processing, which can occur in analog radios. There are analog radios that have digital signal processing, and even if they don't, you can add it to the audio chain. EHI and other companies sell digital signal processing devices, and sometimes they include amplifiers and speakers. And so you can have the same questions about a legacy radio simply because he's not talking about the subject he thinks he is. He's talking about digital signal processing.
Okay. Interesting. And the second question is about Aurora 500 watts radio. That's a Flex. And in the email, if you don't mind to look at it, I specify a few questions. Just the discussion on the TechNet, and that's what I said, when not much traffic is present. Actually, we have plenty of guys willing to talk today. So, in regards to that video, statement that was made in the video, power at amplifiers raised from 500 watts to 1500 watts does not provide the same gain as the first 500 watts. This is kind of known, but you don't mind to say a few words. So the question is why? But I didn't take it from my hat. I just thought that it would be good if you say a few words about it. Back to you.
Okay. You know, I mean, I'm a fan of yeah, I really like my Flex. I like Flex Radio. It let me down in more than a few ways. I was waiting for the promised firmware updates that almost never came, and now they're starting to come, but because the company makes their money on the new model, not my model, they are not including my model in the updates for the firmware. They're charging me for them. And vaguely promising something in the future, but so far I've gotten very little out of my $200 and change firmware annual payments. I'm just giving them the benefit of the doubt that if they see money up front, they'll behave a little bit better. Well, anyway, one of the things that I have a little problem with is the gentleman who founded the company and started the ball rolling. Gentleman, but with the last name Youngblood, he initially designed his early SDR. I think he called it the A1000. He sold it as kits. Then he founded Flex Radio and started to manufacture FireWire-based software-defined radios, the 3000 and the 5000. Then he upped it to the 6000 series, which was connected via Ethernet, so it ran on the network, and that's one of those that I bought, the 6700. And then, unfortunately for me, I think, he decided that he wanted to retire. So he handed the business to his son. I don't have the faintest idea what his son's skills are, but nevertheless, it's managed by Youngblood. The Aurora, to me, is a marketing gimmick. No one, to my knowledge, sells a radio with a 500-watt output. You know, there are some that are 200 watts, but I don't know of any that are 500. So I just think that some guy who probably shouldn't be president of the company said, gee whiz, let's give them something that they never had before. And then the marketing department had to make some sense of it. So their reasoning behind the 500, to me, is meaningless. I am not a portable contester with a full-power rig. You know, if I leave my house with anything more than a handy talkie, it's a strange thing. So although I understand the concept that it's easier to carry one radio with a 500-watt output than a radio and a linear amplifier, it's not my job. I don't have any particular interest in it. So I looked upon it as a silly idea that probably will fade and go out of production in a year or two when they sell a couple of dozen of those units. But I could be totally wrong, and they could have reinvented the wheel for all I know.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Okay, I hope I didn't fall completely out. No, I didn't. That's good. Anyway, that's my opinion, Wesley. I don't want to burst anyone's balloon or raid on anyone's parade, but I think it's a silly feature set that will not be popular and not be a major seller.
Okay. Donor Flex Radio manufacturing suggests that this 500 watt, 18 pound radio is perfect for Diego Expedition, mobile, or use.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club.
Versus any other solution. What is your take on it and why?
Link active.
Again, I don't do any of those things. I'm not interested in any of these things. I'm not planning to do any of these things. Is it possible that a couple of guys will figure out that it's for them, it's better to have one radio device with 500 watts versus bringing a linear along? Maybe, possibly. Is it going to affect me? Is it going to affect the industry? Are they going to sell 10,000 units? I don't think so.
Okay. Okay, I'm ready. Question 2A. Isn't that absolutely insane for him to point out how small, thin, light, and portable that radio is, and at the same time propose use of a Honda gasoline generator to power it up? Back to you.
Well, yeah. It's one of those unfortunate techie versions of let's come up with a solution to a problem that doesn't really exist. They're trying desperately to be innovative, and I don't think they accomplished it. I think it's more of a marketing gimmick, and it's a novelty item. And hams don't really respond usually to novelty items. They respond to better value for your buck. And, you know, these radios are not cheap. So, again, will there be expeditionary type who will probably be discounted those radios so that they go into the article that they use them? Yeah, sure they will. Is Flex Radio going to make a lot of money off of this particular model? I don't think so.
Okay. Question number three. How does your existing radio differ from that 500 watts brick?
It's 100 watts, not 500 watts, but I happen to have a linear amplifier right next to it, so I can pump it up to 1300 watts, which is larger than 500 watts. And also, mine is capable of simulating 8 different radios simultaneously. I don't recall Aurora. I think Aurora comes in 2 flavors. One has 2 virtual radios. The other has 4 virtual radios. So I have 8.
Okay. Question number 4. Actually, you partially tried to. No sub receivers. They are all main receivers. So that's the quote from video from that guy. And the question is, in terms of what? What is the distinction, the difference between a sub receiver and receiver in early version of Flex? Back to you.
Okay, there are hardware radios. Those are fundamentally separate radios. They have separate antenna receive, antenna transmit, and they work completely separately. You can have them run simultaneously. You could feed one into the other if you wanted to. The others are virtual receivers. Each of my 2 hardware-based receivers can be broken out into 4 virtual receivers. And so I can listen on 4 different bands across the spectrum. I used to have it configured so that I had UHF on one pan adapter, VHF on another pan adapter, and, you know, 20, 40, 80 meters in the other pan adapters, and, you know, if you're so inclined. And you could record, you know, 8 different streams of conversation across all those bands. So that's the difference between a hardware-based radio and virtual radios being split off from one single hardware-based radio.
Okay, we have 2 questions, 5 and 5A. 5, how practical is SO2R, single operator, 2 radios, operating practice in amateur radio contesting mentioned in the statement?
Yeah. Well, again,
question 5A is, how practical is a multiplex, the operator 1 radio, operator 1 radio, operating practice in amateur radio contesting mentioned in the statement and then time perspective?
AC2GS. Okay. I don't use it because I don't do contesting, and there's no real benefit for rag chewing using that. But theoretically, again, it allows you to use one single unit. Usually you require 2 radios to do SO2. But you can use the two hardware-based radios within the chassis of Flex radios, and so it's less cumbersome and kind of internally cabled and a little bit easier to set up. But again, it's all not much to me because I don't use the technology. But that's the theoretical benefit of having it on a single radio that has two hardware radios. You know, nowadays it's not that unusual. There are more than a few modern-day SDRs that have two hardware radios built into them, so it's not as unusual as it was 12 years ago when I purchased my 6700.
Okay. Question number six, polar modulation technology using Flex radio. Could you say a few words about it? So I assume at least that he's talking about quadrature modulation. Few words. Back to you.
You have to explain to me what it is you're alluding to, because I'm not particularly sure. And again, we got the background noise going on, so it's not easy for me to figure out. So rather than give me a term that probably a marketing guy came up with, if you can explain the underlying concept, I'll probably be able to answer.
Okay. The guy in the video says about using power modulation technology in Flex radio. And then I gave you the link to Wikipedia, which is a polar modulation is analogous to quadrature modulation in the same way that polar coordinates are analogous to Cartesian coordinates. Quadrature modulation makes the use of Cartesian coordinates. I mean, what the heck? Anyhow, the quadrature modulator approach to digital radio transmission requires linear RF power amplifier. Well, I assume they have A-class amplifier there, but you know better.
Not particularly. Flex radio is a little paranoid. Originally, with the 3000 and 5000 series, they were kind enough to have the software that the computer runs to run the 3000 and 5000 was open source and available. And so other companies basically stole their software and modified it and made money selling their competing radios. So after that exercise, Flex got real paranoid. To this day, the firmware is encrypted. The only way I can replace the firmware of my radio is to have them mail me an encrypted version from Austin, Texas. They won't give you the source. They won't let you kind of write to your own SD card. It has to be encrypted. So they're very paranoid, and they're very limited with actually explaining the vagaries. I don't know exactly what they're alluding to. Software-defined radio is, by its very nature, quadrature. It's a little bit beyond the pay grade for some people, but it has to do with the imaginary signal. You take the RF source. You then rotate it 90 degrees, and then you use the rotated and the original source as part of the algorithms to deal with the digitized signal processing. So it's inherently quadrature, but everything that's SDR is inherently quadrature. So I'm not quite sure why they think their software-defined quadrature is that much different than everyone else's.
Okay. Question number seven. What is that makes amplifier to run at class D where statement? Because it wasn't really that I was interested with D. statement was all amplifiers run at all ham gear since World War II at Class A. What is your take on it?
Yeah, I don't quite know what the question is.
Charlie.
Yeah? Yeah, John?
I think Leslie's going to have 20 questions, so pick me off the list.
Wes, is this the last question, or are there more?
No, there was one more question. And that's it. So I'm sorry taking so much time, but let's forget it. Forget it. Thank you very much, Dr. Ray.
You're welcome, Wes. John, N2ZC, you feel like coming and giving me your stuff for tonight?
Yeah, good evening, boy. And yeah, just a quick question and Happy New Year. I forgot the rules. If you have a visitor over your house and you're having a ham radio and let's say you make a contact, what are the rules regarding a non-licensed person operating the radio? Well, you being the operator, but allowing them to speak over it. If you know, can you just go over that briefly?
Yeah, it's called third party. You are operating the radio on their behalf, and they can speak on any of the frequencies that your license allows you to speak. Very simple, third party.
Oh, okay. That cleared that up. You know, with everything changing, I didn't want to run into a foul of anything. All right, thank you again, Roy. I'll be on the side. AC2GS, November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Okay, very good, John. Dave, you're next. So what's your question for tonight? Dave, are you out there? I guess Dave stepped away for a little while. Jim, are you out there?
I am. I just returned from a short hiatus. 82
BHD. Okay, you're up. What do you got for us tonight?
So I want to preface my question with the assertion that I intend on staying fully within the customary parameters, if you understand.
Sure.
So reports from down south seem to indicate that in the recent festivities, there was an EMP thing used in what happened down there, some sort of EMP weapon. And it's way too early to know if that's actually true or not. But for this forum, my question is, does such a thing exist outside of the electromagnetic pulse from a nuclear weapon? Is there such a thing that exists as an EMP weapon to be used against electric or electronic systems that is real? Back to you, Roy.
Well, my guess is if it is real, it's probably top secret because I've never read anything other than the theoretically based nuclear-driven ones. There's nothing to disallow an EMP weapon that's not inherently nuclear. It's just a matter of downscaling the energy output. You can get a lot more electromagnetic pulse damage from a nuclear-based generator of it than for a chemical base. But, you know, you could have kind of mini EMPs. I can't see why not.
KFGZ.
Yes.
Are we talking about the conflict in Venezuela?
I would assume so. That's the only thing going on down south I'm aware of.
Do you ever think it might be just possible that they just knocked out a power plant or two?
Yes, it's very possible. I'm just kind of responding to the question. Whether the premise is correct or not, You know, we may know tomorrow, we may know next year, or we may never know. But I'm just responding to the given premise.
PhD.
Yes, Jim.
Just to be clear, I'm just talking about the technical question, if there's such a thing exists. I'm not looking to branch anywhere out with this. If anybody had some information on that, it would be interesting. I don't think this is the place to go wide on this, just narrow. Does such a thing exist? And if it does, where, how? It's very interesting technological development. And we probably don't know is the answer for tonight. But I figured I'd ask.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, there hasn't been any public literature on that, although I see no particular reason that you can't make one that's not as powerful as you could if you use nuclear energy. Because, again, it has to do ultimately with the storage of high-density energy sources. And although the probably the best bang for your buck is nuclear-based, you could implement a weaker one using simple chemical energy storage devices. In the same way that, you know, lasers really started to be important when technology was able to store up a lot of energy and provide massive power bursts to a laser array.
Comment?
Sure, Wes.
Yeah, I would like to ask a question. Why is this impossible to make EMP weapon now? Is it because the amount of energy is so enormous and only nuclear weapon could do it, because everything is inverse square law, right? Or because if the drone has conductive surface from foil or bridge, then it can act as a Faraday cage. Back to you.
Well, I mean, Faraday cages, as we often say, they're not binary. They're not on-off. They're attenuators. So it depends upon the signal burst. If you get the signal burst strong enough, most Faraday cages are only going to get rid of, deal with some of it, attenuate the signal, but not remove it entirely. In the same way that there's no theoretical constraint that requires you to use a nuclear power source to provide an EMP, but it gives you a lot more bang for your buck and gives you a much higher energy density. So you can construct an EMP that's less massive, that's, you know, smaller, that takes up less volume, that produces a very high amount of electromagnetic signals with nuclear energy than you can with present-day chemical batteries or other energy storage devices. But you can still make one. It's simply either going to be much bigger or much less powerful.
So, in other words, the only known technique to make it is additional radiation because of you having such a toy, right or wrong?
Well, I think it's more a matter of the popular press that's been writing articles about it kind of takes it to the most practical extreme, which is nuclear-based. You can get a much more terrifying EMP weapon based on nuclear fuel than you can with chemical fuel. But, I mean, you know, if you really wanted to work science fiction, you could probably write a much scarier article in which you use antimatter-matter collision to generate the EMP pulse. That'll give you the maximum amount of energy density and you know, that you, God knows what you could do with antimatter. Fortunately, we only have picograms of the stuff at any time, so it's not really feasible yet.
Thank you very much.
PhD.
Yes, Jim.
I'm comfortable with the I don't know answer. That's good by me. If you're going to throw it out there, if you want to move on, that's fine. If you want to continue, that's fine. I'm good. Good either way. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. You know, as more than a few of TechNet favorites who've come and gone, you know, it's above our pay grade, unfortunately. So, and you know, I can't see again why there shouldn't be. It's just probably never landed in any kind of public publication, at least that I'm aware of. So it may exist. It may not exist. It probably does. Whether they used it, who knows? But I thank you for bringing it up. It's an interesting little, side topic there. Okay, let's try again. Dave, are you back? We called you a little bit earlier and you didn't respond, but we'll try again. Dave. Okay, I guess he got called away. John, KZ2SHO, what do you got for us tonight, John?
Yeah, hello, Roy. Everyone else on the net. Hope you're all doing great. Wandering back towards my computer, so I have a comment. I thought you might talk about AI this evening, and I would turn it into a comment, but I can turn it into a, well, not so much a question, but maybe a... the thing I found here, and, boy, getting back to the computer here, I don't see the screen I had open. Oh, here it is. So, there's a DV bot, apparently, that you can dial up from certain types of nodes, maybe, if I understand it right, D-Star is a way to get into it. And that DV bot you can talk to on air from your radio. I'm curious about the legalities or concerns there, if anyone has any. What do you think about that? If you have a, let's just say any type of node. Let's say you had any type of node with an AI bot attached to it. What do you think about that as far as ham radio rules? Go ahead.
Well, I would hope and or assume that there is someone managing it, like a control operator, because you can't kind of just leave it on its own. It would be practically, it would be like a random text generator that was hooked up to a radio, and, theoretically, the FCC doesn't like that. I mean, also, they might think of it partially as a broadcast instead of a transmission back and forth. But again, if there's a control operator, way back when I was kind of demonstrating the different early aspects of artificial intelligence, I synthesized my voice and used it as the intro to the technical net one time, and I thought about inserting the audio stream, because that was around the time that OpenAI started to offer the voice synthesis back and forth for the net, but I decided against it because I didn't think it was special enough. But it certainly is doable. It's not technologically problematic. As long as you have some kind of access and you don't get charged too much for your tokens, because, they're starting to try and actually make a little money with the technology instead of giving it away. So, again, my fundamental understanding of the FCC laws is as long as you have a net control operator operating the radio, you can use. I don't see any kind of reason why you couldn't possibly use a AI agent unless they got really fastidious and told you that this was not an individual and it wasn't a conversation. It was like playing a pre-recorded message. But they allow that under some circumstances as well. So it's probably in the gray zone of law that, you know, before people abuse it too much, they probably wouldn't have much to say about it.
Yeah, real good, Roy. I guess I kind of had a similar opinion about it, but I really haven't read amateur radio rules and regulations that deeply. You know, we know what we know, and we pick things up over the years, and sometimes people reprimand us and don't even know what they're talking about. Or maybe they say you can do something, and they don't really understand the laws either. But I was curious, and yeah, if anyone wants to look it up, apparently the reflector is called XLX20S, X-ray Lima X-ray 20 Sierra, and it is a DV bot connected to ChatGPT, and saw a friend demonstrate it earlier today, and it did say that ChatGPT was unavailable at that time, although that was for one question. Another question it did answer without giving that error, so I don't know if that was just a one-time fluke, or maybe uses several different sources. I have no idea. But if anyone's curious, look up DVBot Reflector XLX20S and see what you find. Maybe report back or tell us what's interesting. I don't know. I thought it was interesting first time I heard of it, although not surprised at all. That's all I really got, Roy. Thanks for the net, and I'll send it back to you. AC2GS from KC2.
Okay, AC2GS, thank you, John, as always, for your participation. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like a gimmick again. Maybe I'm just kind of too gimmick-sensitive tonight because of, Flex Radio's 500-watt radio conversation. You could probably, anyone with a cell phone can kind of do that, and then some, like my cell phone. I have an app where I can talk to ChatGPT, I can talk to Gemini, I can talk to DeepSeek. They're all kind of giving it away. We're in a transition where each of them are trying to figure out how the heck to monetize it. And right now, I don't think they have a good answer. If they really charge as much as it costs them, plus a little profit, I think people who kind of regularly chat away with it will stop, because people tend to be kind of cheap. It's something that pretty much everyone I can think of, if you got a cell phone, if you have internet of any kind, you can do it. So do you really need to do it through digital radio? I don't know. Again, the gadgets are interesting, provocative. But again, do I think it's going to open the door to something fantastic eventually? Not really. I mean, I'm staring at my my computer screen, and I already got browsers that have buttons that say Gemini. I unfortunately have MS Office that keeps on wanting me to use their AI agents. We're living in a glut of AI agents. Yes, Brian?
Well, I don't want to interrupt when there's a break.
Okay. So, I mean, everyone who's interested, it's Reflector XLX20X. I'll take a look at it one of these days and tell you what I think. But, been there, kind of done that. I've chatted far too many times with ChatGPT. It's, I don't know. I remember the good old days when I convinced ChatGPT that 1 plus 1 equals 7. So, I can't kind of forget those days. Okay, anyway, next on the list is Sam. What you got for us tonight, Sam?
Hi, Roy. Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf. I like to talk about batteries out in the field and how long they last.
Okay. Batteries is a diverse topic. Batteries is really ultimately chemistry. It's what we chemists still call reduction oxidation reactions, in which the ions flow in the electrolyte in the battery and the electrons flow in the cathode to the anode over a piece of wire that lets us use the battery to provide voltage and currents and power.
Well, question.
Yep.
Okay. I'm going to use, if the weather permits, the Zyko G90 transceiver, 20-watt transceiver. And I bought a 12-volt, 10-amp LiPo battery. And I was trying to determine if that would last long enough for my couple of hours of activity.
Okay. It's kind of small. The rating is amp hours. Because it's not only the amount of current that flows, but the time that it flows for. So, in other words, if you have a source, a load that takes 10 amps of 12 or 13 volts, it theoretically the rating suggests that it will drain that battery in 1 hour. Problem is the way that everyone measures the capacity of rechargeable batteries. The slower you discharge the battery, the smaller the load, the longer it takes to discharge it, and the more efficient the discharging is. So unfortunately, when it says that it's a 10 amp hour battery, Sarah Lee, it doesn't necessarily mean that no matter what the discharge rate, it'll go for that hour of 10 amps. It means that if you drain the 10 amps for much slower time, instead of 10 amps, if you drain it at a rate of maybe a tenth of an amp, then when you do the math, it'll come closer to having 10 amp hours of power out of it. If you try to drain the battery at 10 amps itself, it probably would only give you about 20-25 minutes before it ran out of power. So the discharge, the actual capacity discharge, is very dependent upon the amount of current you go. The smaller the current, the more efficient the transfer is. The higher the current, the less. So, small, you have a radio that's rated at 20 watts?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, it's very dependent upon how much you transmit. The more you receive, the less you transmit. The duty cycle will extend the life of the battery. So, a 10 amp hour, 13 volt rechargeable battery for, say, theoretically a 20 watt radio, you might get about 10 hours, 15 hours. But again, if you do mostly receive, it'll be twice as much.
Okay, just to give you one other statistic, the max that the transmitter uses is 6 amps. Now, okay, if that adds to your equation.
Yeah, that's a reasonably large amount. So in other words, theoretically, if you were to just go weird and full duty on something like that, you'd be lucky if you get an hour's worth of constant transmission. So, theoretically, you should get more because it's rated for 10 amps. But functionally, if you're constantly draining it at 6 amps, it's going to give you less efficiency. So, again, it's highly dependent upon your duty cycle. if you listen mostly and talk a little bit, it'll last you longer. I can't tell you exactly how long, because again, it really depends upon how you respond in the field. Don't expect a long time if you're going to be talkative. If you're going to be somewhat passive, you don't have to worry too much.
Roy, you left out one other factor in the equation, that is the temperature outside, both in terms of the human being and also the effect on the battery itself.
Yeah, that's true, but it's somewhat difficult to kind of calculate. Lithium iron phosphate, the batteries are probably okay in our environment. If you were doing this someplace like Chicago or Minnesota, if you remember the news, there were a lot more reports of electric vehicles that were stalled because of the incredible low temperature. But for all intents and purposes, I mean, it will diminish the storage capacity somewhat. But, try and keep it relatively warm. The current running through it will help you. If you're going to start it at the very beginning without running any current through it first, you leave it outside of someplace in Minnesota, then you got problems. And it's very possible that the chemistry will simply fail for you because at below a certain critical temperature, the chemical reaction just doesn't go forward and you don't get the power. But I don't think it's a big problem if, you're huddling with it and while you're using it, it's running current through it. It has internal resistance that generates some residual heat that will help the chemical reaction.
Roy, thank you very much. Enjoy your presentations and net control activities immensely, and thank you for your answer. Okay, I'll be standing by.
Okay, Doug, thanks. Thank you, Sam.
PhD coming.
Yes, Jim. Okay, yeah, first Jim.
Thank you. That's a great topic, and I'm learning more about that all the time, but I claim no expertise. But it's my understanding that a lead-acid battery that has a 10-amp-hour capacity really only has a reusable capacity of 5 amp-hours, not 10 amp-hours. If you use it to 10 amp-hours, if you drain 10 amp-hours out of a lead-acid battery and recharge it, you've reduced its capacity to do that again. And if you repeatedly do that, you reduce its capacity to do that again, more and more each time. A nickel metal LiPo 4 battery can do much greater than that. Rather than half of its amp hour capacity, you can take somewhere 80%, I think it's even more than that, and do it repeatedly. So it really is dependent on the chemistry of the battery, of how far down you can take it down repeatedly. But the real crux is to understand that a lead-acid battery that's rated at 10 amp hours can only do that once. And then it starts deteriorating. Gross oversimplification, there's a lot more to this, but nickel hydride, from what I can understand, is the better answer these days. This is a weeks-long discussion, but I figured I'd throw that out. Thanks, Roy. Back to that.
You're welcome, Jim. What you're talking about is the difference between standard batteries and deep discharge batteries. Some batteries are designed to survive a deep discharge. Others, if you try to do that, you irreparably damage the cathode anodes and undermine the life. What Sam was talking about was lithium iron phosphate, which is kind of the latest, greatest rechargeable technology out there. It's kind of the state of the art for electric vehicles until something else better comes along. So lithium iron phosphates tolerate deep discharge reasonably well. I wouldn't suggest that you keep on smacking them around, but they're much more survivable, certainly, than lead acid is.
lighter. Agreed on all points.
Yes, indeed. Significantly lighter, significantly more expensive. Used to be a lot more expensive back 10 years ago when I bought my first one. They're going down in price. The Chinese are kind of able to lower prices on things rather miraculously. So there are different quality lithium iron phosphates out there. The